All right, let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars. He's a teacher, in fact. Mr. Dorsey Hager. I always learn something from him when I put him on the show. Hey, Dorsey, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back. How's everybody doing up there on this wonderful spring Friday in Cleveland?
How can you not feel good after watching that Cavs game last night?
Where has that newly assembled roster been? Who were those guys last night?
I don't know.
That was amazing.
And
energy, the defense, the steals, the rebounds.
Kevin Love. Oh, my God. He exploded last night.
Yes. It was awesome. It's like, you know, the NBA is a game of adjustments, and it's like every adjustment throughout that game last night that Ty Lue made worked.
Yeah.
They brought somebody in quick. Stop Kevin Love from shooting outside, and they put Kevin in the post, and his jump hook was working. They brought somebody in bigger to physically, you know, mess with him on the post, and he stepped outside and hit jump shots. I mean, it was just all night long was amazing how well their offense worked. Didn't they break a record? They only had 3 turnovers last night.
Something
franchise
like
record,
that. Yeah.
Turnovers in a playoff game.
Amazing, just amazing. And I figured it would be a squeaker, but it was actually a blowout. It really was.
Oh, yeah. I kept waiting for Raptors to make a run, make it interesting. And fortunately for the Cavs, they held them off. Every time the Raptors got close, the Cavs answered with a run of their own.
Yeah, so good stuff.
It was great to watch. Up 2-0 coming home. Hopefully they can close it out in Cleveland, get a few days rest before the Eastern Conference Finals. How awesome would that be?
I know. I love it. Hey, let's get into the show here. And I heard an interesting story on NPR. Actually, it was early today about what's going on with the elections. We got primary elections in Ohio and a number of states next Tuesday. And the GOP strategy, at least for now, for the primaries, is to embrace Donald Trump. And usually, and that's kind of a 180. A lot of times they're figuring if the guy's not popular in the White House and Trump is not even pulling 40% of the popularity vote, they run from him. In this case, they're saying, oh, no. He's doing a good job. He's being attacked, so we have to support him. And you were telling me off the air that that kind of strategy is working in Central Ohio right now?
Yeah, we have a district, the 12th. It's Governor Kasich's former district. And then Pat Tiberi held that seat for 20 years after Governor Kasich had it. And Pat Tiberi, you know, historically, the 12th was gerrymandered purposely by the former speaker, John Boehner. John Boehner and Pat Tiberi were very close. And that district is about a +7 Republican district. So in any normal election, you would say +7. You know, if any Democrats dump any money into that, they might be just throwing some money away. But the Democrats have put up some really good candidates. They've put up a young man with a great story from Eastern Ohio who lives here now and is a small business owner and a family farmer named John Russell. We have the former sheriff, Zach Scott, who's an incredibly good general election candidate for that district with his law enforcement background. And then the Franklin County Party came out and endorsed Franklin County Recorder Danny O'Connor, who's also a great Democratic candidate. And it's going to be interesting to see who comes out of the Democratic side. Now, on the Republican side, tying back to what you were talking about, the NPR thing, is there's two very moderate fiscal conservatives, Troy Balderson and Kevin Bacon. Troy Balderson's a tremendous friend of the building trades. I've had a great relationship with him, worked well with him the past 6-7 years while he's been in the Ohio Senate. And Jim Jordan, who's my congressman, who's the head of the Freedom Caucus, went out and recruited his own candidate, a township trustee. Her name is Melanie Linehan, and he's bankrolled her campaign. I think he just did an ad buy for her of around $250,000. And you're right, that's the script that she's going from. While Kevin Bacon and Troy Balderson are, you know, touting fiscal conservatism and lower taxes and this and that, you know, this Melanie Linehan is, you know, repeal Obamacare, build the wall, support Trump, drain the swamp. And I think in a primary, I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, that's why they have the election, you know, but I'm hearing the polling that she's doing very, very well. And that has made Pat Tiberi, who originally wanted to stay out of the race, come out and endorse Troy Balderson because he obviously does not want to see his congressional seat that he held for so long go to Jim Jordan and one of his disciples who helped put his friend out as the speaker, John Boehner. So it's going to be really interesting Tuesday. That's one I have my eye on. Like I said, on the Democratic side, there's John Russell, there's Danny O'Connor, there's Zach Scott. On the Republican side, it's Troy Balderson and Kevin Bacon. But the rumor is Melanie Linehan, with all the money that's been infused from Jim Jordan and other outside dark money that's been attacking Balderson and Bacon, is and she's running to Trump and defending him, and the commercials are Trump, 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 and the rumor is she's going to win that primary on the Republican side. So I think it gives whatever Democrat comes out of that primary a great opportunity in that district, because Trump is not polling so well in that district as he is other rural districts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that district has a lot of Franklin County in it. It has a lot of southern Delaware County, which is a lot of educated, you know, middle to upper middle class professionals. It's people that, you know, maybe they may be registered Republicans, but a lot of times they vote Democrat if there's a good candidate that they agree with. So it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be really interesting.
Very interesting
times. Tuesday, there's going to be a lot of stuff to watch. And then, you know, we can't forget your friend and my friend who was on your show a month ago, Aftab Pureball.
Mm-hmm.
Down in the first in Cincinnati. I know he doesn't have a primary opponent, but that's going to be an interesting congressional race to watch going forward as well against Steve Chabot.
Yeah, Aftab was a fun guy to talk to. We'll definitely have to get him back on the show. Good stuff there. Well, I figured I'd pick your brain and I'd get a good answer, and I certainly did. Let's move into the legislative conference, and we're talking about the National Association of the Building Trades. And number one, where did they stage it this year? And maybe you could just give us a wrap up of what went on.
Every year it's at the Hilton Towers in Washington, D.C. It's a great time. Everybody arrives usually on Saturday or Sunday. We stay through Wednesday. It started off with a day of action, doing some community events, some things, you know, helping clean the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, some other community events throughout D.C. that a lot of the members took part in. And then it ended on Wednesday with lobbying on the Hill to congresspeople and senators. But in between, we had a lot of speakers. We had a lot of workshops. One of the workshops that I went to was a workshop on apprenticeship readiness and pre-apprenticeship. There was people there from Minnesota and also from Texas talking about what they're doing with pre-apprenticeship. So I got to pick their brain a little bit, bring back some tools to Columbus to use for our pre-apprenticeship program that we're doing that we could help institute here. And got to hear some great speakers. Member of the laborers and the current mayor of Boston, Marty Walsh, spoke. Great speaker as always. Connor Lamb, fresh off his victory in Western Pennsylvania, was there to address everybody. He spoke. He did a wonderful job. Joe Manchin, the senator of West Virginia, talked. And then outside of some of the workshops and outside of the speakers as well, we also had our traditional Ohio State Building Trades breakfast that was put together by our leader, Dennis Duffy. And we had a great range of speakers there. We heard from Senator Sherrod Brown, Congressman Bill Johnson, and also another member of the laborers from Cincinnati, Rob Richardson, who's running for treasurer of the state of Ohio. So it was a lot of stuff jammed in three and a half days. But it was great to see everybody from around the country in D.C. to hear about some of the things, not only moving forward politically and some of the issues such as infrastructure and multi-employer pension reform and things like that, but also hear what other people around the country are doing, dealing with issues that affect their members. And, you know, there's a lot of events in the evenings to go to as well. A good friend of mine that lives here in Columbus that was out there at the time, we hooked up A.J. Stokes, and he's currently working on the to push back right to work out in Missouri. So we talked about some of the things that he's doing out there, some of the polling, some of the things he's working on, and the issues, and a lot of the labor leaders out there that he's working with. My counterpart in St. Louis, John Stifler, is one. Of course, we know a lot of those guys, and it was just interesting picking his brain to hear what he's going through, similar to what he helped us here in 2011 by repealing Senate Bill 5.
It was
a good week, a lot of information, a lot of good stuff.
Dorsey, the governor over there in Missouri, may get impeached any day, and he's the guy that's been pushing that right to work.
I saw that yesterday. His approval rating, I think, is down to 12%. I think they need 3 out of 4 in the legislature, in the House, and 3 out of 4 in the Senate to vote to hold impeachment proceedings. The word out yesterday that I saw on an AP Wire report is that they've already got more than the three out of every four, which is amazing because that's Republican-controlled House and Senate. But, yeah, I think that I think the Republicans there are ready to wash their hands of Governor Guyton. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And then, you know, that could push back. I in talking to AJ a couple weeks ago, and I got to follow up with him, they're still not sure if the Missouri legislature is going to put that on the ballot in August or if they're going to put it in November. AJ thinks that they want to put it in November because they want to drive out vote to repeal it or to keep prevailing, to do away with right to work. But he thinks if they put it in November that the Republicans are afraid that that'll drive out turnout of the Democrats and help Claire McCaskill get elected and keep her Senate seat. So they're still waiting to see. You know, there's so much. It's amazing how much is involved in the strategy, the thinking, and the polling, and the messaging. And it's just, it's absolutely amazing. That's why it was great to sit down and have dinner with him for a couple hours on Monday night and just talk about that. You know, and unfortunately, I was kind of reliving what we relived here in 2011. But hopefully they can fight that back. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the everything plays in with the governor and the pending impeachment for him. But I don't think he's long to be in office there.
There's so many crazy things going on in some of these legislatures. I was just talking at the top of the show. They want to put, and this is ABC, Associated Builders and Contractors, and I know we could do a whole show just on them. They want to put prevailing wage. They want to repeal it in the state of Michigan. And Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, her group, the Michigan Freedom Foundation, is the one that's supporting it. They want to, I mean, it's a race to the bottom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it makes it easier for outside contractors and out-of-state contractors to bring unscrupulous workers from out-of-state that are going to take a lot of those wages and tax dollars, and if there's any benefits, out-of-state as well, and not spend the money locally. It's just crazy, the long-term community and social effects that the repeal of prevailing wage, you know, that going right to work, that all that brings with it. It's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
I know ABC also wants to overturn some apprenticeship requirements in some municipalities. They're doing that. They're saying, well, there's too much. You know, you're training. There's a lot of stuff that you don't need to do in an apprenticeship program. And I'm scratching my head. I'm wondering, okay, wait a minute. Isn't this all about safety, training, make sure we have the best skilled workers on the job, and let's just eliminate some of that stuff? Is that where they're going with all this?
It sounds like it, doesn't it? It sounds like it. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, obviously this isn't the 40s, the 50s, or the 60s where workplace fatalities and construction accidents were much more prevalent, but it's because of the training and the safety and our apprenticeship programs of why they're not. And I would hate to see us go back to that. You know, it's construction is still a very dangerous trade, and I think sometimes we take for granted because we don't hear about some of the accidents that go on because they're much less frequent now. But it would be awful if we ended up going back to where we were.
And exactly.
A lot of these people are not driving us back to that just because they want to save a buck. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the reason that, as you pointed out, the reason we have fewer accidents is because of the investment in safety and training of the workers. And if we want to scale that back, you know what's going to happen. It's real simple.
Yep.
Real simple. All right, let's take a quick break. Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line, Executive Secretary of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Also, we have a reporter from the American Prospect talking about food stamps in America. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
You won't find more comprehensive coverage of the issues most important to Ohio's labor trades than in the pages of the Labor Citizen. The Full Color tabloid is delivered to thousands of union construction workers each month, providing reports from local unions, interesting feature stories, and news that impacts Ohio's union construction industry. But the only way this valuable monthly publication can be delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trades union membership is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived on awfradio.com. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Dorsey Hager of the Columbus and Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Forgot to mention their Twitter handle again. That's Build Central OH. Build Central OH. All right. What's this $5 registration fee? I take it this is for our license plates or what?
Yeah. So the new Franklin County engineer, Cornell Robertson, became a very good friend of mine. He's done a lot of outreach to the building trades. We've partnered together on a lot of different issues that affect local county government, especially as it comes to the building trades and working people of Central Ohio. One of the issues that we had been discussing for about the last 6 or 7 months was the funding that he has access to through the county for road maintenance, repair of roads, and also bridges and things like that. And with the budgets constantly being slashed from the state, counties and county engineers are finding they have to do more with less. So it's putting road projects behind schedule. It's making the projects longer. It's tough to get to bridges, to inspect them, to repair them, to make sure that they don't go beyond disrepair to where they have to be replaced, which is obviously a lot more than just maintaining them. So he and I sat down, and he came up with the idea, and it's not new. There's 5 other counties that do it. I think Cuyahoga is one. But the legislature has allowed county governments to pass a $5 increase on registration fees for automobiles. And that $5 goes directly to the county engineer, again, for road maintenance and things like that. So he asked if I and a couple of other members of the building trades, which Mike Engberg from the Laborers District Council went down and testified as well, and give testimony to the county commissioners in an open forum supporting this, which is going to create a lot of work for not only the laborers, the carpenters, the operating engineers, but a ton of building trades members as we continue to improve and upgrade our roads and bridges here in the county. So I was happy to do it, went down, gave testimony, talked about the benefits of the $5 increase. We talked about the budgets from the state being slashed, so the county is having to work, do more with less. But there's also the gas tax implication. I don't think the gas tax on the state level has been raised since 96, and the federal level, I think it's 92. So as more and more people are flooding to Columbus and Franklin County is growing, there's a lot more maintenance that needs to be done on our roads and bridges, and hopefully this gives our county engineer, Cornell Robertson, and our county commissioners the tools to be able to do that.
Boy, I tell you, we've been talking about that gas tax for years on this show, and now, as you've seen, gas prices are going up. It would have been so smart to grab this when they were down to like $2.20, $2.30 a gallon, and this is going to be tougher now. I mean, it's not like it was $4, like it used to be $4 a gallon, but as you pointed out, look at more people. I mean, what was it, 92 on the federal level, 96 on the state level the last time?
I believe that's right. Yep. Yeah. I know it's been over 20 years for either one. So it's been a long time.
Okay, and think how many more vehicles are on the road, number one. Number two, inflation.
Absolutely. I mean, the cost of asphalt, the cost of gravel, the cost of materials, the cost of metal for guardrails, the cost of steel for the bridges. Everything has went up so much. And, I think that he does a great job, and I think the county commissioners do a great job managing their budget and do what they do to provide services for the people who live and work in Franklin County. But it's a head scratcher. And I remember having these conversations going back to the legislative conference. I remember we had these conversations 3 or 4 years ago when there was a lot of hot talk in D.C. on raising the gas tax people are so fearful of being labeled, you know, somebody who increases taxes that they're just fearful of doing it. It's really bad. And you're right. When the gas prices were down $2.20, $2.25, to throw another nickel on the gas tax.
Big deal.
I mean, to make our roads and bridges safer would have not been a big deal at all.
Nobody would have noticed it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the retirement of Mr. Walt Workman, executive director of the Central Labor Council. Fill me in on this.
A Columbus and Central Ohio local labor icon and staple since the 70s. Walt Workman was a meat cutter by trade. He went to work UFCW, Local 1059. Once he got out of the Navy, and went to work as a financial secretary and an officer for UFCW, and then went to become the executive director of the local Central Ohio Labor Council, and he's done an incredible job. We had a plan in place a couple of years ago to allow Walt to retire. Unfortunately, we had an untimely accident with one of our fellow brothers we talked about on your show a couple years ago, Dave Caldwell, the steelworker. So Walt held on to the job a little bit longer, gave us some time to get somebody ready to take his place. And that person is Mark Fluharty, who I had lunch with yesterday, who will do a tremendous job. But, yeah, Walt Workman, well-deserved, long career, great labor leader here in Columbus and Central Ohio. And he's retiring. His last day is going to be June 16th. So he's going to be sorely missed, and there's a lot of people from all over, not only locally but the state, that have been calling me, emailing me, talking to me, and passing out well wishes to Walt, wishing him well on his retirement. But he's going to be sorely missed. He's done a tremendous job for local labor here and organized labor in Columbus and Central Ohio.
Sounds like he was a hard worker, and hopefully he'll have a long and successful retirement as well. That'll be good.
He was a hard worker, but as hard of a worker as he was, I think he'll even be a harder golfer starting on June 17th. So, anybody who's ever played golf with him, the guy's a phenomenal golfer. He's really good, but yeah, he's a hard worker, but I think he's going to be an even harder golfer. So, but he's earned it, and I hope he has a great retirement.
Good stuff. Well, it switched like from winter to summer here. I'm sure you got some of that warm weather down there in central Ohio.
All we needed was the draft, some of those incredible Browns draft picks, and then boom, spring came. So
isn't that something?
Wonderful. Yeah. My wife just said that this morning as I was on my way in. She said, 2 weeks ago, I was scraping snow off the sidewalk, and last night I was turning on the air conditioning. I love Ohio. We just skipped spring, and like you said, went right to summer. But a lot of great things happening. So I know that you're happy that some good things are happening in Cleveland. I mean, I saw today not only the draft and the draft picks, but they're talking about more economic development downtown, maybe even tying in a new stadium for the Cleveland Browns in 2029, 2030, is that right?
I saw that. You know, I'm scratching my head on that one. I mean, the stadium is not even 20 years old that they built here, but
I think it's keeping up with the Joneses, don't you? I mean, I saw the plans for the stadium in L.A. When I was in Vegas in February, I sat down with one of our managers for the Insulators in Vegas, Rick Johnson. He went over the plans for the Raiders Stadium, which I think is $2.1 billion.
Oh, my.
I mean, think about a football – I mean – what is that, 10 days a year?
Yeah.
Flash? Eight regular and two preseason?
Yeah, that's it, 10 days a year.
That's amazing.
Well,
I think that's what it is.
I'm thinking the only way to make this viable, and they should have done this back in 99, would be to put some kind of a dome on it so they could make it a year-round facility, and it would be nice. Well, look what they did in Minnesota. They had a Super Bowl.
Yeah, though. Yeah, year-round facility, dome, you know, Super Bowl, Final Four, all that stuff. That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
that'd
if they awesome. Go that route, I can understand the knowledge of going, the feasibility. That would make sense. But I don't know. I'm scratching my head on that one. We got to work. Let's work on the team first, okay?
Yeah, let's assemble the team, then we'll worry about the stadium.
There
That's
you
right.
Go.
You're right.
It'll all
gotta
fall
be happy
place.
After the draft, right? You got to be excited.
Oh, it was great. It was absolutely great. And we'll see. You know, I'm a bit hesitant because it seems not all those draft picks have worked out very well for the Cleveland Browns, even though
our law of averages has to kick in.
It's got to. Yeah. Keep our fingers crossed. All right, buddy, we're going to let you go. Take care. Keep up the fight down there, and go Cavs.
Go Cavs. That's right. Hopefully the next time we talk, we're talking about continuing the march towards the NBA Finals. So hopefully, like I said, they can close out the Raptors at home, get a few days rest, and then get ready for the Eastern Conference Finals. So it's always great to talk to you, Flash. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Indians baseball this weekend with some warm weather, and I look forward to talking to you in a month.
You take care. Dorsey Hager, Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Find him online at columbusconstruction.org. Quick break. Coming up next, what's going on with food stamps in America? That story and more right here on America's Workforce.